Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about sequestration and your finances. And to lead us in that is John Gillick, certified financial planner, fellow seminar presenter with NITP. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
And John Elliott, retired Fed, retired seminar presenter, email answerer, and knower of all things federal. Good morning, John.
Morning, Bob and John, of course.
Okay, John, we've actually got a couple emails in already, and I believe you do as well. But why don't we just talk in general, and then we'll open up the phone lines in just a little bit. So people are anxious that if they are asked to not show up one day a week for however long it might take, what are they going to do? What do you tell them in class?
Well, it's obviously a new topic, Bob. And it was interesting when I was presented with the topic for this show. I had to do a little research on my own. So I do what I normally do is I go out to Google. And it's either your friend or your enemy. But I came across some interesting information. There was an article, Survival Plan for Maintaining Financial Stability During Sequestration. And that article actually had some information. I'll give you a few of the stats in here from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, the NFCC. And it was a financial literacy survey they had conducted. And it's actually, I would say, even disturbing. Yeah, because this is just a survey that they did. And of the respondents, 33% of the respondents admitted to not paying all of their bills on time. 39% have zero non-retirement savings. 39% carry debt over from month to month. And then this is interesting, 16% have utilized overdraft protection in the last 12 months. And that's a general survey, but what I see even teaching class is I do spend a lot of time with the monthly budget. And when you say budget, you know, the hair stands up and the folks, you know, the horns come out, and for some reason budget's been given a really, you know, it's bad term over the years. But so even in my materials now, it says monthly cash flow. For some reason, that makes it a little bit easier to fill out. But, you know, just a one-page budget sheet at this point in time for these folks that are going to go through this process. If they didn't have their financial house in order before this, it's going to obviously make it worse. We actually have a couple of questions from a gentleman that we'll go over here in a bit. But if you're dealing with someone that has very little to no debt, they've got good spending habits, most likely you're going to find somebody that has a budget at the root of all that. And in addition to the budget, something that I cover quite a bit during class is a net worth calculation worksheet. And that's something that I think everyone needs to pick up at least once a year and figure out exactly what you're worth. And when you fill out the front page, of course, you're putting in things on the net worth calculation worksheet, things that you own. And then on the back side of that are all the things that you owe. And
is that why they call it a balance sheet?
That's why they call it a balance sheet. And as my dad termed that sheet, you know, actually it's a Texas term, big hat, no ranch. Because when you add up everything in the front page and you subtract what's on the back page and you end up with a negative number, that's not good.
That's not good.
That's not good. So it's nice to have the nice shiny car and the really nice big house, but if you got, you know, a negative net worth as a result of all that, you know, living, again, as these statistics show from this survey, that's just not a good position to be in. So, and it's interesting when you teach, you know, half the heads in the room nod, or a good portion of them nod when you talk about debt and the negative aspects of debt. Then the other ones just have the, you know, the wide open eyes and the fear. And so you always tend to have a blended group when you're out teaching. So it's I'd say the numbers are fairly accurate for the survey. And it's a point, I think, sequestration. I mean, I'll just kind of round back to the original idea here. It's a wake-up call for folks financially. And
how about if we looked at it with say, an individual with $100 a day compensation. Times five, it's $500 times 50 is 26,000. So you can multiply this by whatever you want. Okay, so that $100 at a minimum is going to get hit by Medicare, regardless of what your income is. Whether you're FERS or CSRS, there might be Social Security. There might not be Social Security. If there's not Social Security in your CSRS, what is it, 7%, John, that comes out of the salary for?
CSRS only?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's 7%.
So it's fairly close to the Social Security amount. It's pretty close. All righty, so that money nobody ever sees anyway. So let's say they put 5% of their compensation into the thrift. Now, that's not going into the thrift. I'm not making light of that, but it wasn't there to spend to begin with. So if I'm starting with $100 and I subtract out the mandatory $7 a week, Social Security, Medicare, call it what you want, CSRS contribution, and $5 for the thrift, we now have $88 that we've really got. But of course, we're not paying taxes on it. So that's diminished. Now, and somebody's going to say, well, no, I'm not paying taxes on it, but I'm also not getting it. So the reverse of that is to say, if I am tight, like your statistics were saying, maybe what I do is reduce my federal and state income tax withholding. Now, please, and I said this last week, please don't misunderstand this comment. If you're used to a decent-sized refund, this makes sense. If you're not used to a refund with your regular compensation, don't go near this topic because you're just going to get further behind. Or if you're just, you know, it's a few hundred dollars, don't mess with this. But if you do need the money to pay your bills, then you could lighten up on your tax withholdings, federal and state. But again, the caution sign is only if you normally enjoy a large refund, might say $1,500 or so or better, combined refund if there's a state. And so we could get some money. We're not going to get it down to zero and say, gee, this isn't really happening to me. But it's not a whole 20% reduction of what a normal salary would be. So then we're left with a net amount that we have to make up somehow. And we, like you said, your stats were disturbing. If we're already at that level, and then we're really in trouble.
Yeah, at that level prior to an event like this. So it's it's scary from that standpoint when you hear that folks are underprepared for retirement. I think the federal service is one place where it's not exactly the case, because for the classes that I teach, I do see a significant number of folks that have mortgages or that are well on their way to be paid off. You see good spending habits, practices when you meet with the folks on the sidelines. They'll come up and share their information. My favorite was a gentleman that came up. He was actually 56, getting ready to retire, and he showed me his net worth sheet, and the whole front was filled out, and there was nothing on the back page. So there was no zero debt, no mortgage, no car, no credit cards on that back page, and obviously that's where we should all be at some point. And I think actually if we dive into this question that we received via email, you might want to read that one off. We could probably shed some light on a real situation here.
I believe he's a fan of the show. He emails us regularly. And this, two this morning already, one very incisive. He said he knows an individual that's really getting tired of this. You know, what is this? This is, I guess, picking on the federal employee. And this individual friend of his said the individual is 55 and thinking of retiring. Can I take my TSP money out without penalty? I have $500,000 in the TSP. This, again, is his friend. And $150,000 in a Roth. And we'll be getting about $3,000 a month in retirement benefits. There's no debt. Now, this is somewhat of a rare beast. So should I annuitize and use the 5% withdrawal rule? I'm just going to make a comment here, John, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know that there is a 5% rule. In other words, if you're talking about distributions, it's 5% if you're older than 55, I think. It's not 5% if you're 55. Tell me if I'm wrong with that.
Well, when you're leaving, retiring, say, as this person is, at 55, there is no tax penalty. You can withdraw, you can use any of the withdrawal options available to you without
with regards to the TSP.
The TSP. Now
the Roth could be a problem.
Yeah, the Roth could be a problem.
But I think maybe I'm reading into it that the 5% rule says if I have X in my TSP, my Roth, and whatever, I can take 5% out and it'll carry me to Never Never Land. That young, I don't know that 5%. But John Gillick, you're the CFP here. I'm the bean counter, cautious. You know, should it be 2 or 3%?
Well, before he starts, I am not bullish to say I'm bearish on annuities, TSP annuities, and most financial planners we deal with, and it wouldn't surprise me if John agrees that. The annuity has a lot, some downsides as opposed to doing something else, like equal monthly payments, which sounds like, why isn't that an annuity? Because it isn't. Because your money is still, what's not being drawn out is still being invested in whatever funds you're investing in.
But there's no guarantee either. With an annuity, there's a guarantee.
Yeah.
But it's not robust because if a company,
interest rates currently are very, very low, which depresses the annuity amounts.
Well, what's happened with interest rates recently is a lot of the annuity carriers have, because they're not able to go out and invest the money because they can't find government securities, short-term, medium-term, that are paying enough, they've dramatically cut the rates on lifetime income rider benefits. They've moved the ages up. Many of the companies that I'm familiar with have gone from guaranteeing 5% income and still giving you access to your principal at age 60 to those moved to 65 at a 5% distribution within the last week or so. Several of those carriers, and we're talking about the large companies, have lowered those payouts to 4.5%. And I think that you're going to continue to see that they're not going to hang themselves out there for providing income long term and access to the principal if they can't take the monies and get be guaranteed on the fixed interest side of a decent rate of return. And when you have the Fed coming out and saying, well, we don't expect any increase in interest rates until 2015, that's a good indicator that that's probably not going to change anytime soon. And just rereading this last line, that should I annuitize or use the 5% withdrawal rule? I believe what he's referring to is the typically in the industry you'll hear, a withdrawal rate of 5% on an amount of money invested with a stock bond mix is sustainable over a long period of time. And now I think even the norm on that has become 4%. And I've heard some ultra conservatives go as low as 3%, but I've got a table in front of me, the probability of meeting income needs. It's produced by Ibbotson Associates in the titling Optimal Withdrawal Strategy for Retirement Income. And with a 50-50 stock bond mix at a 4% withdrawal rate, there's a 95% probability of you not running out of money.
Do that again. That was profound.
It was profound. What they do is they look back over 25 years worth of market data, and at a 4% all the way up to an 8% withdrawal rate, depending on whether you're 100% bonds, 100% stocks, or 50-50, 75-25. And actually the sweet spot over the last 25 years would have been a 4% withdrawal rate from a 75% bond, 25% stock mix at a 97% confidence that it would have been okay. But as soon as you dip up to 5%, your sweet spot is now a 50-50 stock to bond mix. That's where the investments would be with your money in TSP. And the confidence level there is 79%. If you jump up to a 6% distribution rate, you drop down with a 50-50 stock bond mix to a 52% chance of meeting your income needs. So there's a pretty big shift between a 5% distribution and a 6% distribution. So for folks that are conservative and they're considering the annuity route, I absolutely agree with John. I don't like the immediate annuity approach. And if you ever decide to take that leap of faith, you have to realize that you're taking the money in your TSP. And in this case, there's a mention of $500,000 in TSP. I personally couldn't imagine taking a $500,000 check, which, you know, realistically I could cash in, right? Pay my taxes and, and hand it to an insurance company for a promise of payments for the rest of my life. And there are options where you can have installment refunds and things like that, where if you were to die prematurely after receiving, say, 4 or 5 years worth of payments, the balance of what you originally put in will go to a beneficiary, either in continued payments or a lump sum.
But you pay for that.
You're not you would have received no return on that money over the period of time that both you and then your beneficiary receive the money back. It would be a zero return situation, and I have a hard time with that.
The other thing I'm going to read into this based on the age, it sounds like it's a FERS covered individual. 55, I'm going to...
Well, no. No FERS. Well, FERS employs, depends on when he was born. He could be FERS born before, I think it's 1948 or 9, his minimum retirement age would be 55. Anybody born after that, it starts going older, a little older. But so he could be FERS or CERS. he doesn't tell us.
Okay, but let's just say he's FERS for a second. Okay. When you buy the annuity, then your three sources of retirement income you have no control over. Your FERS annuity, your Social Security, and now you just bought an annuity.
Yeah.
So you really don't have much control.
So you'd have, in a sense, three annuities at some point. And do you need three annuities? And the TSP annuity is not indexed to inflation.
Unless you want to buy the inflation
unless
rider.
Unless you want to go increasing term. And if you want to do that, you're going to start out with lower payments, and each year you'll get a raise. So if you're young, yeah, the annuity were the only option, I would go increasing term. 55 is young. So if you're in your 50s, early 60s, I would probably look at increasing term rather than the immediate flat, same monthly payment every month for the rest of your life with no cost of living adjustments. Your, of course, your Social Security payment and your FERS annuity are indexed to inflation. Which is extremely important benefit.
Okay, we're really hitting the top line here, and that was the question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what most people say. But usually I look at the other half. How much money do you need? You know, it's nice to know how much money I have, but I have to have a certain amount to pay my bills. So maybe I'm trying to be a financial planner here, and I'm not.
Because I'd like to just, I'm going to reread this question here. It says, you know, I am 55 and thinking of retiring. Okay, so that's 55, and some folks may not know this, but I'm sitting next to a guy, John Elliott, that he told me his first job with the federal government was working with my father at OPM. I think he might even said working
for him.
Well,
it was my first job at OPM. But
first job at OPM.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, when you look at that, my dad retired at 55. And then he lived until he was 63. So that's kind of a sobering thought. Maybe even more for
then
me.
Then you'd want to get the immediate annuity, not the increasing term. Definitely.
Right.
But
so
we can't predict these things.
And that's just it. You can't predict. And I had a client last year that was very close to. He passed away in his month of retirement. I actually did not make the retirement date due to cancer. So, you know, you're 55, and I'm going to read through this. You have $500,000 in TSP, $150,000 in addition to that in your Roth, and you'll be getting $3,000 a month in retirement benefits. And then I love the next very short sentence, I have no debt. So we're all assuming here that you don't have a mortgage. which I think is phenomenal. So you just described for a financial planner the ideal client. And I'm looking at this, and if you don't have a spending issue, which you can't because you don't have any debt, I think retirement would be a solid option for you at this point. The reason I would not take, and then it says, should I annuitize or use the 5% withdrawal rule? I would use the 5% withdrawal rule because I don't think you're going to outlive the money. If you have a good, now this is not the 5% withdrawal rule if you have it all sitting in bonds. That's not going to work. If you tried that 5% withdrawal rate on an all bond portfolio over the last 25 years, you'd have had a 35% chance of meeting your income needs. But from reading this, I suspect that you'll be like a lot of folks I work with. You're not going to draw off a lot of money in your TSP. Most likely you'll be one of these folks that come in and say, hey, I probably want to leave my TSP alone until I'm 70 and a half. And the first thing I'll tell you is that you might not make it there.
What I would recommend to this person is, if he hasn't already, you may have, is go to the TSP calculator, which is at tsp.gov. And if you're interested in exploring annuities, just to see how much you'd get, by all means, use the calculator. Say, if I do this type of annuity, you know, level payments, how much would I get based on my half a million? And by the way, he doesn't have to use the whole half a million for annuity. He can use part of it to purchase an annuity, do something else with the rest, So, but let's say just if he's worrying, well, what if I dump the whole $500,000 in the annuity? What would I get? And then he can also do increasing terms. See, what would he get? And then he can do, and this is really important, what if I do monthly withdrawals and keep the balance going and investing, and assuming a rate of return on my whatever funds I'm invested in, how many years will it take you to run through the money? And that's what the calculator will tell you. It's easy to use, and it's really an eye-opener, particularly when you look at the monthly withdrawal methods and how long, depending on, you know, what payments you want, how long they'll last. So they may end up lasting a lifetime, and then there's a monthly withdrawal method based on the IRS life expectancy tables that should last a lifetime. But so it's an invaluable tool in your financial planning. And if he's using the TSP or does use the TSP calculator, he would probably be able to answer this question for himself.
Now we have somebody on the phone who's going to ask a question, and we're going to try to answer it. Good morning.
Good morning. I appreciate the show. I listen to it whenever I have time. I'm actually happening to be home today, but normally at work I listen to it.
Good.
But so I appreciate all the information. And then also, my wife have actually taken a course with the National Institute of Transition Planning. I just want to mention that their website is very good, too. So most people should actually check out their website, too, because it gives you a lot of good information. I think I might have had my question answered by going to their website because my question basically relates to the voluntary contribution. I'm a civil service employee versus FERS.
Mm-hmm.
But I have actually funded 10% of my total earnings through that opportunity.
Wow.
But my question is that should I convert it over to a Roth account? Because one thing I don't do, even with my thrift plan, I fund that to the max, and as well as get the I'm over 50 years old, so I max that out. But bottom line, I'm not sure if I should convert that monies to a Roth that I have in the voluntary contributions, or should I just pull it out and then take the interest? Because my wife, she did that. She recently retired. She's a federal government. She was a federal government employee also. And she took the interest and moved it over to the thrift plan, the interest income that was earned, and then pulled the money back out. But what I wanted to do is maybe convert it to a Roth in order to do some other investments later on, though, since I'll be retired to have more time.
Okay, your VC has been funded, and evidently it's been funded for a while. Otherwise, there wouldn't be interest earnings.
So, oh, yeah, yes. that's true.
All righty. So the interest earnings at the day you decide to do whatever with the VC can be split off, if you will, and put into the thrift. Or it could go into a traditional IRA, but thrift is nice.
I probably will do the thrift because we've done that with my wife's. We put the interest in there, and that way it's deferred also.
Okay, but the principal, I know you know this, cannot go into the thrift. So the principal's got to go someplace.
That was actually one of my questions, and I found the answer actually going to the website, the National Institute of Transition Planning. I went to the website because they had a detailed information on that, so I'm going to pass that along to colleagues. So, but bottom line is that I would have probably wanted to put it in the thrift under the Roth thrift because the low cost of that, though, of the thrift plan versus Fidelity or Bank, well, actually Vanguard I like better, but that's what I wanted to do, but I just read you can't
do that.
No.
Right.
All righty. So we're going to move it then to a Roth IRA, and it can go right in, and which is hard to believe because it would have no income cap. It doesn't have any other issue. It just goes in there.
And no taxes?
Zero tax because you didn't, when you funded your VC, you got no tax deduction. You got no tax benefit whatsoever. The earnings were tax deferred until later, and we're going to move those over and keep them tax deferred into the thrift. But now we've got the principal, which is, again, the initial amount you put in, and at the time you put it in, whether it's over a period of time or whether it was all at once doesn't make any difference. You didn't get a tax deduction. So if you didn't get a tax deduction, they sure can't tax it when it comes back out.
No, they'd be taxing it twice.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. We'd be taxing it twice. And one thing, we had a problem with our income levels. We couldn't have put that type of money in. That's what gave us the great benefit of being able to do this, though, and then having this option that we wouldn't have been able to.
That you couldn't do otherwise. And here, this huge amount of money can go into a place that you couldn't go into with a teeny amount of money.
Exactly.
So, you can do that. And we actually have a show, and I am embarrassed to tell you that I can't remember the week, but I believe it was July 22nd or 24th, 2012, and we walk right through how to do it. And the beginning part of the show is devoted to the VC. Mm-hmm. Tammy and I do this show over each year because the tax law changes, forms change, but the concept hasn't changed any. So you know the website, NITPINC.com, and watch for the website to change inside of 2 weeks. Is really going to be nice. It's bad now, but it's really going to look good. And anyway, so you could listen to that, and there's a PDF on that. So when you click on For Your Benefit Radio Show, there's a PDF there for that show of all the forms that you could possibly need to do this, whether it's the VC to a Roth or whether it's moving money into a Roth IRA where you otherwise wouldn't think that you could.
Yep.
And the whole show is that. I hope I answered your question about the money going to a Roth. Yes, you can. Is there anything I didn't answer? I'm sorry.
Well, I thought he was asking, should I do a Roth or a traditional if I'm not?
Right. That's exactly the question.
I think I got to go with the Roth. Why? Because the investments inside of a Roth IRA are no different than the investment choices inside of a traditional IRA. So assuming I'm going to make the same investment choice, I'm going to go with the one that I get no taxes on. But if you've never had a Roth before, that money has to stay in there for at least 5 years, and I'll define that in a second, or 59 and a half, whichever is later.
Okay. I do actually have a small Roth, about $20,000 in a mutual fund, but I don't even mess with it. I don't even pay attention to it like I do the thrift because it's a small amount.
Can I ask you how old you are?
I'm actually 54, and I have one more year, and I probably will come out in a year because I'm like that prior person who wrote in and said, oh, they may come out, though, too. And so I said, I'm doing the same thing.
Okay, so you're still going to be under 59 and a half.
That's true.
So if you do this, you don't really want to touch that money till you're 59 and a half, but very technically, if you needed money, It's interesting. You wouldn't pay taxes on any of the initial distributions. This is very odd, but with regard to a Roth IRA, the odd is good here. Mm-hmm. The first money that you pull out of it is considered to be the first money you put into it.
Okay.
So in your case, it's a substantial amount of money going in, and if you got between a rock and a hard place, you could take money out of the Roth and pay no income taxes on it. But once you've taken all that out, which again I think is remote here, that you're going to do that in 4 years, then you're going to have to pay taxes on the interest if you didn't leave it there 5 years and potentially a penalty. But the five-year period's interesting. What's today? It's May 11th, 2013. I truly sometimes during tax season don't know what day it is.
Yeah,
I know it's Monday.
It is.
Anyway, if you did it, if you did it,
you said May.
It's March.
It's March.
It starts with an M. You all are awful picky.
He's hoping for
March 11th.
Yeah, I'm hoping for May. Anyway, March 11th.
We don't want to scare people.
Okay.
You missed tax time.
I lost
2 months
of my life.
But here's something you'll like: the money that goes into the Roth is considered to have been put in the first day. I think I got this one right. January 1st, 2013. Odd, isn't it?
Okay.
Even though it wasn't. So, okay. Just a comment to you.
And just Bob, I want to follow up. And there was something interesting about the Roth TSP is that you cannot move from a Roth IRA over into it. Mm-hmm. So I understand his feelings on low expenses, things of that nature, but the other thing is that in my first run through that material, it caught my eye. There is actually a required minimum distribution from Roth TSP. So at some point in time, prior to 70 and a half, folks that have money that are participating, putting into the Roth TSP, they're going to want to get their money the heck out of there and move it to a Roth IRA. They're going to want to do that rollover. That's a non-taxable event because if they leave it in TSP after 70 and a half, they have to start taking it. They're forced to take a distribution. And the idea behind the Roth is that you kind of you want to grab from it when you need it. I'm a big fan of spending the money at that phase of your life, but you would be required to take a distribution if it's still in the Roth TSP.
Good point. That's a very good point, though. Then that's probably will help answer saying no, I didn't miss out on anything because that money I probably won't even use anyway. It's more likely like the Roth will probably be the best thing, and it'll be probably used for estate purposes of passing along to the next generation, though, as indicated. Because I think we're doing okay with the resources we have, and then the retirement that we'll have, though, because being both fellow employees, we get the cost of living increases.
Right.
I think that's the direction we'll go with that, though. Appreciate the help. And another thing also want to point out, though, also, long-term care, we did do that. We did both get the long-term care from the federal government, though, and we thought that was very good for planning purposes to have that because that wouldn't eat away our estate. Even though that would not be a problem, but we felt as though that would be the best thing.
We did it in a young enough age too, so that was a good move. And they're good folks. They come on the show at least once a year, and Tammy does webinars with them, etc. So anyway,
well, we appreciate all the help that they've given the federal employees over the years because I've probably been to one of the courses at my agency and my wife. She's definitely been to the course, though. She was the latest person who had been to the course, though. But as I said, she's now retired.
Okay, you got another year to come to another one.
Yeah, that's why I'm looking now. When you get close to retirement, pulling the trigger, you do that.
Okay.
So I'm trying to get my agency to bring them out to my agency.
All righty, so, thanks.
Let's say, and one more thing for you. There's just your idea on using that Roth for estate planning. There's actually a book, Parlay Your IRA into a Family Fortune. It was written by Ed Slott, S-L-O.
Oh, yes. Okay.
The Guru.
That is a fantastic book, and it's right down the path that you're heading. So if you get a chance, pick that one up.
Okay. I'm familiar with them. I'm an accountant also.
Okay.
My wife is a budget analyst, so we know finances and stuff like that.
Great.
So. But bottom line, what helped us accumulate dollars was not our fellow salaries. We did pretty good, but we had other sources of income besides the federal salaries. Though. So yeah. That's what allowed us to do it, though.
For those of you all listening, Ed Slott is the IRA guru, I'd say, almost of the country. He's as I understand, he's the number one fundraiser on PBS
Yeah.
And why? Because who watches PBS? People with IRAs.
Yeah, that's the best program. Yeah, PBS is the best thing. And if you, that's a good point.
Okay.
We love it. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye bye.
All righty, so that was a good call.
That was a great call.
Got a good email, and actually the email, or there's a second email, and the comment was, your guest for Monday's show is a certified financial planner. Yes, I already know what he's going to say. I'm not so sure. I didn't know what he was going to say. Your guest will emphasize the importance of staying the course. This is a very sensitive subject with the TSB and furloughs. We know that. I wonder if your guest lives paycheck to paycheck and is now losing 20%. And I would venture to say our guests most people are not living paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. Although John's stats at the beginning do bring up the point that there are a fair percent of people that may be living paycheck to paycheck.
It's interesting, Bob, because when I read this question, I had to chuckle because I'm as honest as they come when I get out there and teach, and I'm not going to be any different here. I went through something that you may be familiar with, starts with a D several years ago. It's called a divorce. And it wasn't just 20% of my paycheck that was cut. It was about 40% of my paycheck that was cut. Okay, and I'm not saying, you know, I don't deserve to pay the money. I mean, it's a different story. But that was at a time that, of course, the housing market had been precipitously dropping. I have, some multiple rental properties. And so When I saw this question, I chuckled because it's exactly what I experienced over about a 3-year period. And during that 3-year period, which would be equivalent in my estimate to, having to take a day a week off for 21 weeks in a row, suddenly that obviously will affect your paycheck. That's a 20% pay cut, and when you go through a period of time like that, it's definitely a fire drill, and you have to look at your life. You have to inventory what's important, what's not. Things like motorcycles that you really don't have time to ride, and a boat sitting in the driveway that you don't have time to take out fish and have to go. So if anything, I'd take the opportunity during a time like this to say, hey, what's important, what's not. Do that inventory. I even tell folks during class, in a tough time like this, eBay and Craigslist may become your best friends for unloading some of those collectibles. I'm suspecting that, things that you bought from Franklin Mint may not, rapidly appreciate in value. And
there's a real interesting article in this Sunday's New York Times. If you mm-hmm. go to nytimes.com and pick it up. I don't remember the author's name, so this may not be, but if you can find it, it's in the Week in Review section of yesterday's Times, and it's about a young fellow who made a lot of money, is an entrepreneur in the high tech, and sold his company for a lot of money, and then he's continued to start companies. But his point was, this is what I found so interesting, is that he had all this stuff, big house, cars. I mean, he could afford it.
Right.
And then he moved his business to Manhattan, and he had this big loft apartment because he could afford it, and all of these toys and everything. And he finally said, these possessions were owning me rather than the reverse. So now he's just downsized, not because he can't afford this stuff. He still can. He's still making money, maybe hand over fist. But now he's in Manhattan. He's downsized to a studio apartment, gotten rid of most of his toys, and he's happier than he ever was, collecting this stuff. So my point is, even if you can't find that article, yesterday's New York Times and Week in Review section, it's still a good metaphor, if you will, for dealing with, say, a reduction in income. He didn't even deal with a reduction in income, and he did this, and he says he's happier than he's ever been.
Absolutely.
Because he doesn't need all this. He just has now buys what he needs.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because those things, they do tend to add a lot of stress in your life, because when you're walking by that boat that you can't use,
right.
or, you know, in my case, when I finally let the boat go was July 4th weekend by the time I got to take it out. And after 3 hours of cleaning it and changing the oil and prepping it and filling it with gas and getting the kids loaded up and lunch, and we spent a whopping 2.5 hours on the water before one of them wanted to come in. Then by the time you haul the boat back, drop off the kids, clean the boat for another 2 hours, and then it sits out in the, you know, a raging thunderstorm and fills up with leaves, you know, your stress level, you know, rather than getting out and really enjoying that thing, you know, it became a stressor, you know, and until it was interesting, the day I got rid of it, it was actually a happy day. It allowed me to pay off the remaining balance on my truck.
Great.
So it's kind of, this is a great time for just stopping, pausing, taking a real good look at what you have going on. Now, digging into this question a little bit, something else I did, there is no match to my 401k plan. So when I initially went into this process, you know, I took the approach of I actually stopped my contribution so that I could get on top of, you know, my new income stream. I'm not recommending that in any case in the TSP if you're FERS because you have a 5% match coming in. Now, if you're hanging out there CSRS and you're going through this process, you're not getting a match. It may be a time when you want to lighten up the load or even stop that TSP if you need to pay bills. But on FERS, I would, you know, if you're putting in 10, 15% of your pay, I see a lot of folks that are at that level. You may be in a position where you want to cut that back down to 5, weather out this storm, and then when things get better, you know, down the road, whenever that is, you know, up your contribution, maybe not only to the level where you had it, but maybe a little higher than it was before. That year and a half, 2 year period off is not going to hurt you in the long term.
Okay, good. All right, we're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. I think we've hit the subject of the show right on, thanks to the caller earlier, as well as the emailer of two different subjects. And we'd love to hear from you all. So 202-465-3080. John Gillick, in the courses, have you had any questions like this come up when you're doing, pre-retirement, maybe even mid-career, where people are anxious and I don't know if they would air it out in front of the class, but has anybody? I haven't had anybody talk about it.
Actually, it's interesting. The only comment I've had, period, so far was from a parent of one of the students that I have in a rental property. It's a college rental property. And his stress level was pretty high when one of the other tenants had left, and he realized that he and the other parents may be on the hook for that part of the payment. You know, I got a high level of stress in an email back, and I almost felt like calling him up and saying, "Hey, I'm a financial planner. I can help you." But I think it's that stress is pretty hidden. You know, I don't necessarily tiptoe around the topic when we're out there teaching, but. Folks are clearly concerned, and I think that, like anything else, if you haven't been out in the front of a planner, and whenever I teach, I say, listen, folks, if you're within 10 years of retirement, that's crunch time.
Okay. Just a quickie, and then we have a phone call.
Fantastic.
How does somebody get in touch with you?
You can reach me either by phone, 301-704-0544, or by email, which is Trader, TraderJohnJ, at gmail.com. That's TraderJohnJ at gmail.com. Had nothing to do with the stocks or bonds. It had to do with the eBay. So but it kind of fits both sides. But,
okay, well, we have a caller. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Hello?
Hi there.
Hello. Yeah, good morning. I have actually a question for Bob.
Okay, I think I know what day it is. Go ahead and give me a try.
Bob, do you know, and it's not about TSP, so if you have a minute, I would like to take advantage of your wisdom. Do you know enough about 1031 exchange?
Yeah.
Can you trade? I mean, can you sell two properties and buy one in exchange?
The answer is yes, but okay. Be careful.
No, you have to go through a proper person.
Well, you definitely should have what they call an intermediary.
Yeah.
But let's say that you sell the two properties for X, the sum of the two sales prices.
Yes.
Then the replacement property that you're going to buy has to cost at least X or more.
Yes, yes.
Cash is really sensitive here. You don't want to touch any cash. So any cash coming out of the sale sits with the intermediary and it goes into the new property. It's like an electric wire without any coating on it. Don't touch the cash.
All right, sir.
Okay, and I could take this on and lose the entire listening audience except you. You can do it in reverse. If you come across a deal of the century, you can buy the replacement property before you sell the other two. Now, that's a bit involved, but you can do it. So, those are your answers to the 1031, forward or backward.
Bob,
thanks a lot, and I'm really enjoying your show. Thank you.
Okay, real good. Thanks Bye-bye. For calling.
Bye. I'd have added it on just at the end there, but I have a close personal friend. He had a 1035 exchange, and he worked through a local attorney, and it blew up because the local attorney, although they should have known this, did not know about the rule of you have to buy something of equal value or greater. So you got to be careful, and you need to know as the person, you know, having it done, the rules. And
I made that mistake being the intermediary. I knew what I had to do. I did it once, never do it again. I did it for a friend. And still a very good friend, but the things that you had to do, I didn't realize that you had to do, and they have people that do nothing but this, and so
and I would recommend seeking out one of the folks that do just that.
Yeah, so. And if you're doing one of these reverse, and they're affectionately called Starkers as well as 1031, mm-hmm. There's a real fine line between people that do it and people that just do what the reverse exchanges. Anyway, we're getting off of the...
Something else I just kind of want to... Well, we have a little bit of time left. Something that they just, to me, is shocking is I still am running across folks that are paying a fairly high interest rate on a 30-year mortgage. And I personally am in the process of taking a 30-year mortgage I picked up a couple years ago. So I've got 28 left. The rates now are so low that I'll have a payment that's $25 a month higher than my current payment, and I'm shifting to a 15-year mortgage. And when you're looking at things like furlough, losing income, the savings that you have just by reevaluating your mortgage or your interest right now is pretty phenomenal. There's a lot of monthly cash flow savings.
And I think you hit the nail on the head again. You got to look at this bottom up, not top down. So bottom up, what I mean is, what are you spending? And that's your first step. And then can your assets carry it? Like our emailer, it looked like we can because the comment was made, there is no debt. So you got to be real with yourself as to what you spend, as to what you need in income. And if that provides you the income based on the assumptions that our emailer had, fine. If it doesn't, you might have to stay a little bit longer. All right?
Absolutely.
All righty. And when in class, I get tax and I get financial questions, and sometimes it's more finance than tax. And I'm not a financial planner, but I think I understand a little bit about it. And they always look at, well, you know, I have to pay tax on this, and I go, well, yeah, but if you're making more and you're paying more in tax, then the risk benefit might be there. Mm-hmm. With regards to our subject. You're not going to pay tax on the full amount of your salary, unfortunately. But that provides the opportunity then to say, okay, I need to come up with the delta between what I was making before. But taxes are a major influence here. One financial planner once said, and I'll just never forget it, financial planning is a succession of moving parts, but he wasn't just talking about financial planning. He was talking about federal benefits, Social Security, financial planning, and taxes are a succession of moving parts. It's like gears. So those gears should all have teeth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's interesting. You just a saying that I use a lot in class. One of these days when I write a book, it'll be in there. I had a client look at me one time, and he said, I bet you have a hard time with folks when you're teaching, teaching them about fixed income. I said, yeah. He goes, just remember this. You can tell him, and this is from a retiree. He said, you'll never understand the terminology fixed income until you're living on it. And those are words to live by. And when we're out there teaching, we're talking to folks, we're helping them get prepared for retirement and that transition. Fixed income is exactly what it sounds like. It's fixed income. And if you don't know how to budget, if you don't live within your means before you get to that point, 14 years of this, I've seen some pretty tragic cases where, folks have failed. So,
okay, we're on fixed time right now. Final comments?
From whom?
Either.
Okay, well, check out TSP Calculator. I've got another good website with calculators that I found just by Googling, fedcalc.com. They do FERS and CSRS annuity estimates. So I had one person who I talked to uses that, very happy with it.
Okay.
So that's another thing to check out.
John Jay?
I was researching, looking for some statistics. I would actually look at mymoneycheckup.org. And again, get out there, get in front of a professional. And
if you want to call a professional, call John at 301-704-0455. Thanks for listening. Next week, we'll be on with Mike Townsend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.